Market moving insight and analysis. Join Jim Cramer, David Faber, and me, Carl Quintanilla, on the opening bell hour of CNBC Squawk on the Street. Good Monday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer, David Faber at the New York Stock Exchange. Futures are mixed here amid more worries about global growth and some COVID variants. Big macro week setting up. We got Q2 earnings this season, a Fed Chair Powell on the Hill, CPI this week, retail sales and more. Our roadmap begins with China's crackdown continuing. ByteDance shelves its IPO. DD removes additional apps. And now a report that Tencent is being ordered to give up its music label exclusivity.
One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. Well, I know. Maybe that's a little bit of an overstatement. But after nearly 17 years of development, Virgin Galactic, and of course, the guy behind it, billionaire Richard Branson, reaches space.
And the FTC reportedly launching an investigation into Amazon's nearly $8.5 billion bid to acquire MGM Studios. We're going to break it all down. China's going to start us off, though, this morning. Got a new piece in the Journal detailing how ByteDance has shelved its IPO plans after Chinese regulators warned of data security risks. Of course, Didi, Jim, was the big story last week. I'm sure you guys talked a lot. It was out last week, but I'm sure you talked about why they're going after their giants in this way.
Well, I do think that this is, again, a belief that the billionaires must be stopped. The creation of great wealth is not right for the communists, and that American companies that are investing may be making mistakes. David, I don't think they want us there. They used to.
Well, I don't know.
They want our capital, but they don't want us to be powerful.
Yeah, it's an interesting division. I mean, listen, you have Chinese companies that obviously made a habit of coming public here for obvious reasons. Our deep capital markets, right. The ability to attract global capital, not just capital that's really domestic, which is still largely the case with many of the listings that would take place either in Shanghai or even Hong Kong. But, you know, in the case of a ByteDance, for example, which heard these regulations coming and sort of said, we're not going to move, they don't need capital as much,
right.
Do they, Jim?
No, they
as
don't.
Opposed to a DD,
TikTok.
Right? They're not, I mean, ByteDance is making money. And so they can use their growth, they can use their own cash flow to finance their own growth, which is enormous. And don't forget, there was a time we were talking about the U.S. government closing down TikTok, which, of course, is their key business.
But you remember when General Atlantic was putting that deal together?
Sure.
It made so much sense. And remember, Oracle was involved. And I just think that the Chinese government, President Xi, has made a point, which President Biden has not addressed, of, look, we are willing to ruin your own deals. I mean, you can go buy Didi, and then we're just going to hurt you. And nothing happens. I mean, it's like, okay, well, that's just the stock market. This president is uniquely not involved with the stock market. I think that what happened was a travesty. A giant deal that's immediately shot down. We don't know anything. We don't know the roles of the brokers. We don't know the roles of the principals. We don't know the roles of the investors. Someone was told that if you do this deal, we're going to crack down. But we didn't know what crackdown meant.
Well, it's not clear that it got fully to the underwriters and they understand exactly what the risk was. They certainly didn't amend the filing to show that there was perhaps concern from the cyber regulation front in China.
But David, that's a canard.
But, yeah.
Who? It's a canard. There is no agency here that's keeping track.
No.
We're hopeless. We don't keep track because it doesn't make any sense. What are we keeping track of?
We're going to talk a lot about tech regulation in China, here in this country, the executive orders out of the White House, FTC, Amazon. But does that matter when you've got a reflation trade that is weakening the way it is?
Look, I think that everything is going Powell's way. And people keep talking about a high GDP. I don't care. I mean, the only thing that is not working for Powell is, and we don't talk about this enough, is the non-vaccination of areas that are major industrial areas, so that there will be absence. The absentees have really hurt the inflation
story.
You
mean globally, or for example, there's
country.
A big piece in the Kansas City Star today about Missouri, lowest adult vaccination rate in the country, now the second highest growth in new cases. Is that what you mean by sort of pivot points that are under pressure from COVID going to affect the rest of the economy?
These are right-to-work states. Where a lot of industrial activity, including Missouri particularly, is brought to. And you're going to see absences. And once again, you're going to see companies. This is all supply chain. they don't talk about it specifically, but they're just people who don't show to work, either because they don't want to get COVID, or they have the good unemployment benefits, or finally, of course, they're people who ideologically opposed to the
vaccine.
Ideologically opposed to the vaccine. I had Dr. Topol on Friday, renowned doctor, and he was saying that he just simply can't believe that people are willing to get the variant. Because we have an oversupply of doses, and he just couldn't understand. I mean, if you went to the doctor, your doctor, if you had a doctor, a physician, and the physician would say you got to take the vaccine. It's not ideological.
It shouldn't be, but unfortunately, it's become a politicized issue.
How did that happen?
I don't know, Jim.
I think it's a blend of certain wings of media in this country, all around the world, actually. And also this ongoing suspicion about, for example, now, the notion that Pfizer is going to ask regulators about a booster.
Even though Dr. Topol says there's absolutely no evidence that it's necessary. Now people are dredging up Israel.
Well, they're not dredging it up. Israel was early with vaccinations.
So they have
do
data.
Have some data, have perhaps, data. That shows the efficacy wanes over time. Although the good news is, as you heard from Meg Terrell, that the risk of serious illness is still very small if you've been vaccinated. These will all be issues, Jim, but we're moving forward. The economy is moving forward at a fairly rapid pace, isn't it? And globally.
It's part of the supply chain problem. We don't talk about it.
Heading into a season where we like supply, right?
Yes.
Back to school, holiday.
These numbers, look, the death rate is low, and that's our great advantage. But these are small base that we just got this weekend. But it was a small base in March of 2020. I mean, come on. Now, 50% of the country's vaccinated. 60% has had one shot. It's not enough.
No, it's not enough. It's not enough.
It's still
emergency.
But I
think you've got to keep your eye on what it is we're trying to prevent, which is people dying. And that has been very successful.
Well, but no, we're trying to prevent
very
people from
successful.
Getting ill.
Well, yeah, of course. But people get ill from other things all the time,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, but if we have something that helps them... we don't know what long COVID is. We don't know what the tail of this thing is.
That's all I.
And if they didn't have an emergency use, if they had it so it was approved, do you think the Philadelphia Phillies would still have less than 75% of the? But these guys are being paid millions of dollars, and they got COVID. What a joke with the organization of the Phillies. How can they not say you have to be vaccinated? How can they not say that?
Well, cases are rising in I think 69 countries. But, David, there's always the possibility that a therapeutic is going to hold out some promise for the fall.
I think it's important. We talked about it on Friday, of course, because we got data from India, actually, for what is molnupiravir, a drug we've talked about a lot here. Of course, the Merck antiviral that conceivably, when they're done with their phase 3 trials, perhaps as soon as the fall, they will submit for emergency use. And it will be effective in the early stages of the virus against all forms of it, which is very important, guys. So, I don't know. We'll see. Jim, I think when it comes to the broader market, you know, there's much going to be much more of a focus on earnings, on the continued questions about inflation and how transitory it is. The Journal Today writing a story about a lot of the different factors over the last 10, 15, 20 years that have contributed to disinflation that are waning. It'll be that debate. We'll be looking at that 10-year. And that's all, you know. These case numbers are going to be in the background for a long time.
Isn't the 10-year telling you exactly the concerns that Jim's bringing up, though?
Yeah.
Right. And slow down. I mean, look.
I'm not sure it is. We had a lot of people on last week, Carl, who were talking about technical moves in the 10-year and the fact that you've got an enormous amount of buying
from foreigners. It does matter.
And that move from, let's call it, 1.5 down to 1.25 was not necessarily a reflection of a real concern about a lack of growth.
But housing prices have gone up so much, not obviously mortgage rates, that they're going to become an issue. PPG, which is a great company, has been regularly, I'm going to use that as my proxy, price increase after price increase after price increase. So, I mean, it's true that lumber went down. It's true that copper peaked. But there is still too much inflation in the system. But the inflation this time, I think, is slowing the economy.
Yeah.
Finally got towards slowing the economy. My point.
Not the last time we're going to discuss it. Interesting way to start the morning, though. Richard Branson, of course, and his Virgin Galactic crew reaching space yesterday. A huge issue. And actually, now we're starting to talk about some of the broader ramifications, Jim, regarding China. As the administrator said a few moments ago on Squawk, they're going to get more aggressive, and perhaps so will we.
Look, I think that we have a lot going space race that we don't see, particularly with Northrop, which is doing a lot of great stuff. But this is, it's exciting. Dave, it's exciting, but what is it accomplishing? What does it accomplish?
It's giving people their, you know, so many have...
John Glenn.
So many people out there who are incredibly wealthy, it's the last thing, it's the last frontier for them.
I mean, no,
this will give
they own
them
every house and every yacht.
Yeah, they've got it all. They've gone through... They're like, what can I... Okay, I'll collect art, I'll collect wine, I got my private plane, I got a few boats, I got a lot of houses. What's the one thing that I haven't been able to do? Go to space!
What's it? Don't you think we... You know who's down there?
Morgan Brennan. Yeah. Let's get to her live from New Mexico for more on the historic weekend. Hey, MB.
I kind of don't see it the same way you guys. I see this as a major milestone for commercial space and a moment. And yes, we're still years away from mainstream space flight for everyday average human beings. But this represents a milestone towards that process. And of course, we know from history, just the last however many decades, that we have seen a lot of innovations and that have come out of space and the space economy. That being said, this was a major milestone for commercial space after Virgin Galactic successfully completed that first fully crewed flight to the edge of space. Founder Sir Richard Branson was on board. Sunday morning, the Unity space plane took off from here, Spaceport America. It was carried up to 45,000 feet by its mothership Eve for what was an air launch. Unity powered its rocket engines. It accelerated to Mach 3, climbing more than 53 miles above Earth. This was a trip that included several minutes of weightlessness, views of the Earth before gliding back down to the runway about an hour later, making Branson and his fellow crew astronauts. Now, after the flight, I did ask him, for whom this has been a lifelong dream, whether he will make the trip again.
I would love to go this afternoon if the opportunity arose. But I now, as a proper citizen of Virgin Galactic, we've got hundreds of people who've signed up to go to space. They need to take all the seats, and I will come and bid them a wonderful voyage like we've had.
Now, speaking of those ticket holders, of which there's about 600, 60 of them were on site for this flight yesterday, a number of them telling me this was a very emotional moment for them. One of those ticket holders, I would note, Elon Musk, who is not only another space billionaire that we talk about all the time, but also a friend of Branson and who is here as a guest personally of him and his family. That perhaps was not very well known, but in terms of the future ticket sales, because of the successful flight, the CEO, Michael Colglazier, telling me, guys, that they are still on track for two more test flights before the summer is out or by early fall. After the next one, they're going to open up those sales again.
Morgan, fabulous reporting, but I wanted to know, one, where's Boeing in all this? Why doesn't Boeing have this? And two, if we can go into space and go quickly, we used to have the Concorde, and I know that there was, I used to ride there, mm-hmm. You'd be in London very quickly. Why can't we have a plane that is that goes to London, not to see the team necessarily, but goes to London and is there in an hour? I mean, if we can do this, why can't we go in an hour to London?
That is the long-term bull thesis for a company like Virgin Galactic. It's not even, its tagline is the space line for Earth. And so right now it's about the suborbital space tourism, but longer term, it has said that it wants to develop supersonic and then hypersonic flights, point-to-point travel around Earth. So we are starting to see some of that development manifest again, whether it's this company specifically or some of the other startups that are also focused on the space, Jim.
Morgan Brennan in Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. Morgan,
fantastic.
We'll talk to you a lot this morning. Appreciate that. We'll take a look at the futures as we go to break. A lot to get to this morning, including calls on Chipotle, Exxon. Well, we got Walmart news, Disney, AXP, and we'll wrap up some of what we got out of the G20 FinMin over the weekend. More Squawk on the Street from the NYSE in a moment.
Welcome back, guys. We talk a lot about, of course, some of the bigger themes that investors are watching, whether it is inflation, how transitory it is, whether it's China and all the different tensions between that country and our own. But another one we're watching closely here, of course, is antitrust regulation, or increasing focus, at least. We got the executive order from President Biden on Friday. We heard about it. There'd been reporting on it. And then we actually got to read at least a lot of the facts behind it, Jim, on Friday. And, you know, it wasn't as focused on rails as some had believed or even shipping. But broadly in its focus, of course, there is this idea of trying to enhance competition as a result of cracking down on the enormous platforms and the power of some of our biggest companies. And then we're seeing the FTC, especially with tech, probably with healthcare under Lina Khan, becoming more of an issue as well. And that's the case this morning. And we also do have a deal that that was called off by Berkshire.
Well, Norfolk Southern stock was down 16. Okay.
Yeah.
Because people genuinely believe that maybe the government would set the rates. Now, that's not going to happen. The government's not going to do that. But what I did think happened, and I think it's going to last a long time, and Dave, it's going to affect your reporting. You know how J.P. Morgan and Bank of America bumped up against the 10% and they couldn't do any more deals?
Yes. Deposit rule. Yes.
I now feel that we might be in a moment where they might say no more deals for companies that are X.
Yeah, that would be odd because, I think more likely is that you can expect if you are a big company and you are going to try and announce something that even has the tinge of antitrust concern, that you have to get yourself ready for a very long review period and the possibility of having to go to court against the U.S. government.
Well, David, the lawyers will finally...
Because the law is not going to change.
No,
and
but
so the law may be on your side if the FTC or the DOJ is overreaching.
But David, the lawyers should be saying, listen, guys, this used to be 80%. Carl, now it's going to be 20%. They have to do that.
Well, I think it becomes more of a question as to time and how much time you want to take to get a deal done and the risk that you will have to go to court to try to force a deal through. But the U.S. government, of course, doesn't want to be in a position as well of going to court where there really is some doubt about what its ability to win.
But
it's going to try basically to jawbone, to scare, and to make sure these deals don't get announced in the first place, to your point. But, you know, some companies are going to feel very strongly about getting a potential transaction done that they feel does not have real antitrust implications and so may have to be willing to do that.
It's impossible for me to think that Facebook can buy anybody.
No, the big tech Facebook, Apple, which has never bought anybody big to begin with.
Beats.
Amazon, it's hard to imagine at this point. I mean, Amazon is getting, any number of different outlets of reporting
on how... They're not buying anybody.
How stringent the FTC review of this MGM deal is going to be. There would seem to be virtually no basis for opposing it from a pure competitive standpoint in terms of film production. But but it does go to this larger question of Amazon and its overall market power.
Look, they could bring a case just to show we'll bring cases. I mean, I know that you shouldn't bring frivolous cases, but frivolous cases are brought every day in America. FTC could come up with a whole new reasoning. I think that we have to get used to a 32-year-old. I don't mean to.
No, you're not.
New, right.
New,
she's very
young.
New theories. Remember, there are set theories for antitrust. I mean, I took the class and I got the great call from the professor to go buy the calls on Gulf oil. He said, that one's going to go through. And I said, well, that's impossible. How can that go through? And he goes, because they're looking the other way. Now, these guys are not looking the other way. They're looking at it. So Lena is going to find, I don't know if she doesn't mind my calling her, but I call JJ. I think she's going to find a new thesis.
Well,
there's going to be new theses.
Yeah, but you need new law.
The street doesn't seem to worry, Jim, because 8 mega cap tech names are half of the S&P gain since May.
That's a really good point.
They don't need to acquire.
No.
They've engulfed and devoured.
Maybe she's going to look at the meme stocks.
Yeah. Well, AMC GameStop merger is going to be really tough.
But we know that
that's going to be anti-competitive.
We know that AMC. We heard that AMC might be merging with GameStop. Something he proposed.
People are going to.
And suddenly on Twitter, they asked me, why can't I be creative like David? I don't know the answer.
It's called investment banking.
Yeah, right.
We'll take a break here. We'll get Cramer's Mad Dash and countdown to the opening bell on this Monday. Don't go anywhere.
Welcome back. We'll do a Mad Dash, and then we'll get you right to the opening bell. We've spent a lot of time talking about ExxonMobil. This morning, there's some research on it.
You know, sometimes you get this research, David, and this is a hold by BMO, and you read it, and you want to buy the stock. You want to buy it aggressively. And that's what I feel. This piece is called Don't Call It a Comeback, and then it's a comeback story. It is. I mean, I just think everything is going right for them. The dividend is secure. The Permian Foundational, Guyana asset is terrific. The board is moving forward for ESG, which I like very much. And David, they have chemicals, 10-year high, some of the parts. I don't understand this, because this is, to me, a great story. With
yeah,
the new
funny.
Board.
They do talk about lots of positive momentum.
No, it's yeah, it's like, wow, let me add it.
Perform.
Yeah. I want to, if this stock comes down, I want to use this as a reason to buy. So initiating coverage at market form is almost as someone said at the organization, look, Chevron's better.
A lot of CEOs don't survive a vote like what happened there. Woods, I think, seems likely to.
Survive?
Yeah, for now. Yeah.
I
but
find that
it's
to be,
tough.
That's a board that could that could be a runaway board.
Well,
there could be
five new seats in a very short amount of time. But obviously, the key one I'm talking about is the devastating loss to energy.
Well, they don't want
of three.
They don't want to get them out of energy.
No.
Remember, they once bought a computer company.
Did they really? ExxonMobil? I didn't remember.
They owned Videc.
Huh.
Videc was a company that I used Videc. It was a computer. It was like the between the personal computer and the typewriter was Videc. Mm. I had a Videc. I was, Jesus, I had an Exxon Videc.
An Exxon
Fill
Videc.
Her up. Fill her up with the premium.
Thanks.
I mean, it was a diversification move, the likes of which has to be one of the most stupid I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But Darren Woods was not involved.
Much worse than carbon capture.
No, yeah. No. I mean, okay. Videc. It was like, well, you know what? We want to prove that we're not in energy. So let's get into PCs.
No. Magicians call it distraction, Jim, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, it's like, let's get into submarines. I don't know. I mean, it's like, shoot. There was no synergy whatsoever. None. Nothing.
Just
let's get into grapefruit.
They're trying to smooth out the cycle, Jim.
Yeah.
I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Let's get to the opening bell here this morning at the big board. It's Duke Energy celebrating its 60th listing anniversary. Over the NASDAQ, celebrating its recent listing is Alzamet Neuro, focused on the treatment of neurodegenerative diseases. Jim, it's going to be a very big week of macro, as we said, with Powell on the Hill. We get CPI tomorrow. Retail sales on Friday. How much this is going to steer things relative to, say, bank earnings?
CPI was the top of value because people just said value, I shouldn't call it. Top of machines.
We talked
some
about May 12th and all
May
of that.
May 12th
yes.
was so important. We need to see a reversal. We need to see some come down of the CPI because ever since then, it has been growth stock after growth stock to the end where Snowflake, Frank Slootman's Snowflake, finally had the chart. People are going to talk about Snowflake. I have MongoDB on. That's an analytic, cloud analytic, David.
Yep.
Mongo.
Kevin Ryan Company, I think, originally Mongo, yeah.
So I think we have to watch the CPI as much as we have to watch JP Morgan. I mean, Jamie's going to come out. He's going to say, this is really a great time. We got three of America. People have to go to work. It's never, we have rock solid balance sheet. It's kind of fortress. And, but trading wasn't that good. And frankly, we're just doing okay.
Well, banks have lagged the broader market by about 400 basis points for the quarter of Q2 as this reflation trade began to get questioned, Jim. But overall, I mean, S&P estimates are 60 plus year on year.
I know, and the stocks had a comeback, the likes of which were they like, took a 6 months of move on Friday, and no one really knew why. You know, and now they're giving it up.
But Citi, I just
new CEO.
Citi's interesting.
New CEO.
Yes, Jane Fraser took over at the beginning of the year. The performance of Citi versus all the others is far inferior.
So you're thinking the buyback's not working?
No, I'm just curious as to your thoughts about it. It's funny, I hadn't noticed. I mean, Morgan Stanley's market value is $30 billion above Citi. Now, Morgan Stanley did a couple of fairly large acquisitions, obviously E-Trade. They also did the asset management firm there. Was it Eaton Vance?
Citi was doing well, David, and then they made that mistake.
Right. That was under the previous management,
it was
where they sent the money to...
Corbett.
Right, they...
Go ahead, say it, David. Tell viewers what they did.
Well, they incorrectly sent a payment.
What, a couple, $10,000?
No, it was half a bill or more. And then the firm that received it wouldn't send it back. Then they went to court, and they were able to keep it. It's more complex than that.
Well, no, but
over dinner one night, I had somebody involved explain it to me, and, of course, I can't recall all the permutations.
Were you drinking or something?
Usually I like to drink at dinner.
Was it French? French wine?
No, I think it was my usual. But the point is, it was not a great reflection on their systems, on their internal controls.
And the stock peaked. Well, look, the stock has issues in terms of what the ethos is, where they fit. And she has to say, here's what we're doing.
That's such a great global franchise.
I know.
Well, and there's been a lot of opinion pieces lately that argue it's the place to work on the street. City, have you seen that? Maybe it's because of their relatively liberal policy on remote working, perhaps.
That's a great point, yeah. Carl. They are trying to actually distinguish themselves
as
being the place that can attract more talent, because we are going to be the hybrid model. We are not going to force
you to be in the office 5 days a week. They had a guy ran for mayor. I mean,
yeah, Ray McGuire no longer works
there. But I'm just saying that they have
he retired prior to running for mayor.
No, I know that. I know Ray from law school.
No, 2 days a week, I'm in the office.
I just mentioned.
3 days a week, I'm running for mayor.
No, I know. I'm just saying.
No, he's on the campaign trail.
What were you saying? What was the point of that?
Frankly, I don't
know.
No
idea. Okay.
Well, because I guess now that it's over, I can say Ray was my friend.
I don't know what Ray's plans are, but I guess, again, back to what Carl is saying, I think they are going to make it a distinguishing feature of their ability to try to attract talent versus J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, a number of others who perhaps want their employees in 5 days a week.
But you
want
to be, we're the slothful bank? Join us, we're slothful?
We're flexible.
Flexible.
Yes.
Flexible, you think Jamie Dimon thinks it's flexible? hey, I'm working today.
Talk about it. It's a grand experiment. We'll see which comes out on top. But for now, most of America is going hybrid. Most of our corporate America is going hybrid.
Well, that's true.
Which is, by the way, leading the NASDAQ right now, or at least the NDX, Docu, right? Peloton's up there this morning, Jim. Zoom Video.
The trade is
one
back.
Of the leaders.
The trade is back. Yeah. And that's because of Delta. Delta Force. That's a Delta story.
But I think it also could be a hybrid story as this becomes more and more clear that as we have the back to work, so to speak, it doesn't mean you're going back to the office 5 days a week.
Did you see the WebEx ads?
I mean, you've talked about DocuSign a number of times.
I think DocuSign
is a good reflection of that.
DocuSign is now doing, I don't know if you guys have ever had anything notarized.
And Zoom is another one?
You know, people who are notaries, it's a try. I mean, I had a notary down the block from me. I remember, going to her and saying, listen, I need, I'm begging. Well, DocuSign has notary. That's something they're doing now. And then they're going to do a cloud so that you could basically get everything done on one page. Mm-hmm. And DocuSign is making changes that are awesome. Zoom has yet to do beyond Zoom.
You've been calling for the Zoom 2.0 for a long time.
And meanwhile, Chuck Robbins, I watch the commercials on our network. Maybe I'm not allowed to do that or
Chuck
whatever.
Chuck Robbins from Cisco.
But WebEx.
Product is WebEx.
The WebEx ads, I think, are quite compelling.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it kind of ties into what we were discussing during the break, and that is Disney's flexible distribution model. Black Widow, 80 million in North America over the weekend, Jim. 60 of it from Disney Plus.
It was fabulous.
People
okay?
Paying.
And I watched it.
What did it cost? Do you know, guys?
$30.
Oh, you mean, meant the film's production budget.
I meant
$30.
$30.
We had the giant Vizio screen. We stopped only when the ramen came. My wife wanted ramen. It was incredible. Hershey's Kisses, too. It was incredibly exciting. I loved watching it. $30 was a total bargain. We made popcorn. She's fabulous. My wife met her once at...
Don't you want to go to the movie theater to watch a big movie like
that? No, that's the point.
Don't you want to go see it on the big
screen? No, you want to be home. You want to be home, and it's over. There's no traffic.
No babysitter.
I thought it was brilliant. No babies. I thought that it was brilliant. It was a great movie.
You want to be
it's
home
the
and it's
best.
Over.
Like that's, versus Tomorrow
you
War.
You are not a resounding yes here then for the future of the movie theater business, are you?
No, I like AMC because the AMC meme people. I happen to like Adam Aaron. I'm telling you, this must be watched. It is so exciting. And get the Vizio screen. The Vizio screen costs me very little at Costco. Wow. I loved watching it at home. At my leisure.
We stopped it twice because some people had to do things.
Right. You didn't have to worry about being late, looking for a seat, right. Paying $50 for pot, whatever. I mean, right. it's on your time schedule.
My wife met Charlotte.
Scarlett Johansson.
Yes, met Scarlett. She met her at the Washington Correspondents' Dinner.
That's wonderful. Yeah.
She was, I'm not done.
Okay.
She was in a porta potty next to Scarlett Johansson.
Really?
And
where's
yeah.
this going?
And she needed toilet paper, and Scarlett gave her some toilet paper.
Like, literally, do you have
underneath.
A square to spare?
Underneath.
Well,
yeah.
Really?
Underneath. And then, but she didn't know it was Scarlett Johansson. And then she opens, and it's Scarlett Johansson, who is, like, so thoughtful.
And we now know also goes to the bathroom like everybody else.
That was not the point of the story.
I'm not sure what
the point of the story is. She's a regular person who is
That's it.
Okay.
I think that's enough.
That Disney got this right. That's all I'm saying. I gave you a little tidbit.
Right. Well, Disney did say in a statement, it affirms our flexible distribution strategy, which I assume you think is not going anywhere. Well, is not changing at all.
I just think that we've all discovered how much fun with these big screens, sound system, sitting in your own couch, not worried about the guy coughing to your left.
We talked to Ari Emanuel about this last week, or was it? I think it was last week. You know, the compensation structure for these movies has changed because you're assuming a back end, and that's what you're paying out on. And direct-to-consumer is expensive. And, yes, they're making money here by charging $30 initially, but by not giving it the full run in the theaters,
right.
are you giving up revenue opportunities? Well, maybe, maybe not, but they're costly. And our own company, Comcast, obviously, and its choices on Peacock in terms of exclusive runs of Universal films, and then there's an Amazon deal after that.
Right.
Interesting.
Look at Charter today.
Yeah.
By Bernstein on competitive fears, right?
Yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Actually, I got a little bit on that, guys.
You know some
stock is down. Stock is down 1.25%. But here was the key point from Bernstein on its downgrade. We expect pockets of enhanced price competition from accelerating telco fiber deployments. We have this written up for you. And as T-Mobile heads into, 2022, with greater confidence in its network capacity and customer service resources, the resultant regional disequilibria, not a word you get to say too often.
No, you know.
Yeah, disequilibria may manifest in slower high-speed internet subscriber and average revenue per user growth, Jim. So they put it a market perform.
David, aren't they always takeover bait, those guys?
No, you know, I would have thought so, but to our earlier conversation about antitrust, who's going to buy them?
Not with Nina Khan.
You know, it's hard to imagine. Maybe Altice is the name that you got to wonder at some point whether they look to sell, even though I know they'd love to be thought of as the buyer, but come on. But I don't know.
Altice could go. Not anymore.
You know, unless you were to merge wireless and again, go back to that. Remember Verizon talked to Charter. They had some fairly serious conversations. But again, antitrust, I don't know. Are any of those kinds of deals really going to ever be allowed under this administration?
Well, we don't know. Because we still have a judiciary in this country.
We do.
They could side with the companies.
But as I said earlier, you got to be prepared for a two-year review and possibly going to court. But yeah, you're right. You're right. And you could win.
Right.
Heck, I mean, Time Warner won. AT&T won.
Yeah.
Oh. Took a while.
Why'd you bring that up?
Because it was the last case, the U.S. major case the U.S. government brought, and they lost.
Boy, the government should have won. Everyone had done better.
They should have called the deal off, but it would have done better. Well, not Time Warner shareholders.
No. I have to tell you, I watch the futures from the moment I get up, and every day it's the same. We're down.
Yep.
And then, you know, Europe closes. Europe, you know, now the British are probably sellers.
Yeah.
And then we
might be in for a long amount of churn here, Jim. I'm looking at Costin's note, David Costin of Goldman last night. Year-end target, 4,300, roughly, essentially where we are.
Yeah.
On the assumption that we end the year with the 10-year at 1.9. Now, they've revised it to say if instead we end the year at 1.6, then you're talking fair value 4,700. So now we're really playing a game of inches here on some of these levels.
Yes, we are. But I, the stocks I follow, unless the government is directly after them that day, they tend to move higher. By the way, David, you know the Cathie Wood stocks are so back.
They are, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Cathie Wood stocks. And by the way, Virgin, you get it.
Well, Space is down today.
Yeah, yes. I know.
Got sold a bit.
Kind of ran.
Yeah, it's down 10%.
But I'm looking at stocks like Nike, like Starbucks. These are not quit stocks. They're not. Ever since Nike, oh, geez. Ever since Nike, they stopped it. They took it up. By the way, you know what's running today?
What?
The semiconductor equipment companies. Those, I think, are undervalued because that's how we're going to be at end the shortage.
Chip shortage.
We need global, and we need this, the foundry. We need global foundry to step up.
Right.
And of course, Taiwan Semi. We can't have the. We don't want the PRC to take over.
We're well aware. Yeah. Continues to be a key,
number one key worry. Threat. Number yep. one worry. Not Delta, but that China says, okay, look, here's the way it has to be. We want five members of the board to be ours.
All right. In the meantime, the losses are much narrower than futures had suggested. Let's get to Bob Pisani this morning. Hey, Bob.
Good morning, guys. Happy Monday. Important thing here is we're struggling to get into positive territory, but a lot of sectors hit new highs here. Consumer discretionary hit new highs. Tech sector hit new highs this morning. Even real estate investment trusts also at new highs. Banks still struggling. Very typical for banks to falter going into earnings season, and that is following a very predictable pattern right now. Keep an eye on that. I know there's a lot of talk about China regulatory crackdown on the tech sector. I just want to point out the Shenzhen Index, which is the main index for at-home tech stocks in China, just hit a new high today, the highest level since 2015, which was the all-time high, essentially. So I know there's concerns, but the in-home stocks in China are doing very well. Not so great for the stocks, Chinese stocks listed outside the United States. I mean, they've just had a very rough month overall. If you just look at Alibaba, that was a 52-week low on Friday. Tencent was a new low. Baidu, I believe, was a low for the year. That's 178. I think that was probably a low for the 2021, maybe not a 52-week low. But you get the point. Who would have thought regulatory or where you're listed listing risk would be an issue. Certainly nobody thought about that 5 or 6 or 7 years ago. As for the major indices, well, you see where we're at here. We're essentially, let's not quibble about a few points. We're at new highs. Small caps, have you noticed here, have been range bound for a while now. The cyclicals are still under pressure. It was really a growth period for June and most of July. I'd say breadth is kind of on the sluggish side. A lot of big tech stocks helped move the market in June and July. Earnings, folks, I'm saying there's big expectations here. I mean, overly aggressive whisper numbers are going to be a problem. They're going to be a headwind for stocks. They are titanic whisper numbers for the S&P 500, and I think that's going to be an issue. I'll talk more about that tomorrow. As for the bank earnings, well, good and bad news. You know, you got the stress tests that are positive. That's going to be good for dividends and capital returns. Credit's been good. I haven't seen any surge in defaults going on. Net interest income is a problem. It's been under pressure, and it's been under pressure for a long time by lower rates. Loan demand, good. Autos and housing are strong. Like, credit cards seem kind of flattish to me. We'll see what's going on. The important thing is the multiples here. For the last several years, bank multiples have been trending downward because of the interest rates. So we're looking at 10 or 12 times forward earnings. Remember, the S&P is 20. And so S&P multiples going up, bank multiples have generally been going down, and that's been a problem overall for the bank stock. That's why, of course, they're value stocks that we see here. Meantime, keep an eye on the banks overall. Look at the KBE, by the way. You see what's going on here. The KBE has been dramatically better because the interest rates in February went up. So bank stocks went up. That's why they've been outperforming. But all the outperformance was in February. Finally, Carl, just want to note, more people coming back on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. The vaccination rate's above 70%. The NYSE has dictated that they can remove the restrictions. There were headcount restrictions on how many people could come out on the floor based on the firms. They're removing that as of today. Unvaccinated individuals still have to wear masks on the floor. So, Carl, the NYSE is very emblematic of what's going on in the rest of the country. They're struggling to figure out what's the balance. So they're requiring proof of vaccination, but they're asking for it, but they're not requiring it as a condition of being on the floor. If you don't have vaccination, obviously you have to continue to still wear a mask. And as I said, Carl, this is very typical of the struggle that a lot of companies are having around the country, figuring out what's the balance to get people back in here. But I do see more people on the floor today, Carl.
Absolutely true, Bob. Fascinating. And of course, companies will have to adjust as the data comes in. That's our Bob Pisani. Let's get a check on the markets here. Dow goes green. The bond report today, take a look at how treasuries are faring on this Monday morning. Yields are mixed. 10-year ticking below Friday's high, but still above the 125 level that we got on Thursday. Tomorrow, we're going to get the latest inflation data, as we said. And then, of course, later in the week, Fed Chair Powell, his semiannual monetary policy report. We're back in a moment.
The international tax deal protects the free, open economic order that is crucial for investment and growth. And at the same time, it's welcome news for middle and working class people around the world. And I think especially for the American people.
That's Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen yesterday meeting with G20 finance ministers talking about them backing this idea, Jim, of a global minimum tax. In fact, the European Commission is going to put on hold their digital services levy to focus on this.
Well, I think this is quite different from if former President Trump were in charge. I think that there's a spirit of cooperation here that they're demonstrating. They want to show in some way, shape, or form that Biden's different. That's my view.
It would be a big development.
Yeah, right?
You guys remember we sat here about seven years ago talking about inversions. Every company out there in the United States was looking for an opportunity to buy another that was incorporated in a different country to lower their tax rate, and a lot of other different things were going on. So this gets, sort of at the heart of that.
But do you agree with my thesis?
I mean, it's obviously a low tax rate.
Do you agree with my thesis that Janet Yellen? But no, because it's funny because I think a Mnuchin Treasury Secretary might be able to accomplish something, but President Trump was not respected overseas.
Meantime, it's got to get through our own Congress, which probably won't start able to consider it till spring. That's going to be a bit of a slog, some argue.
Oh, yeah. Right? I mean, it's kind of like President Wilson coming back with a 14 points. Congress said, forget it, President Wilson, you're done for. President Wilson was a racist.
Okay. Yes, I've heard that.
Thanks.
Racist.
Thanks.
Yes.
It's true.
It's another fact that's been shared here.
Yes.
It's true.
Yeah, it is
true. All the forts were named after Southern generals. How the heck did that happen? Anyway.
Dow's up 46. We will get stopped trading with Jim in a moment. Don't go anywhere. Let's get to Jim and stop trading.
We didn't talk about Walmart. Flipkart raises $3.6 billion U.S. And looks like a valuation around $40 billion. I think Flipkart probably should be valued a little bit more versus India, big country. But I think it's worth pointing out. And I know that Walmart, there's a piece, Morgan Stanley, saying that Plus is kind of flatlining. But I would focus more on this Indian deal, which I think is very significant.
Every wire story about the valuation today says with the IPO looming.
Yes,
Jim.
There's a lot of looming. And there's one. Look, I think people want to play India because that market is so vast, but obviously so hurt. And I feel so badly about all the people. She's India decimated by this thing.
Yeah.
Indonesia decimated. Brazil decimated. Yeah. But India terrible. But I do think that Walmart should be noted as keeping this thing going. And I think it's a good piece of real estate. How about that?
Very good. Jim, what's tonight?
I've got an outfit that people probably say, well, what are those guys? MongoDB. It is a software, these are all platforms, 40% growth. All these companies are doing so well. They do a lot of stuff with AWS, but also with Google. They can show you how much faster they are than using Microsoft, which is really important. There's a whole cottage industry of people who can do things faster than Microsoft. And I think that Microsoft is so powerful, but maybe the power could be waning.
Really?
I think so.
Yeah. You saved your biggest pronouncement for the last second?
No, I'm just wondering.
Microsoft's power could be waning?
No, I'm just wondering. Every single company I deal with is saying the reason why the hack is because they're still using Windows 95.
Sure.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that they have to update. And no one I know says that the window that Microsoft's their cybersecurity is the best.
Imagine what IBM once said about a young Bill Gates. Right.
What I'm saying.
It's nice to have upstarts keep the big guys
that's
on their
what
I'm
toes. Saying the upstarts, Frank Slootman too. I know he's not young, but Snowflake's coming on big.
Jim, we'll
watch
see you at
Snowflake.
6. Mad Money with Jim Cramer on CNBC. Dow's up 55. Another hour of Squawk on the Street starts after the break. You've been listening to the opening bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.